welcome to episode 99 of Tabletop Game Talk, a show where we talk about all types of topics in tabletop gaming. I'm one of your hosts, Sydney.
And I'm Chris.
Today we're talking about Dice Tower Con 2018. This was our third Dice Tower Con, and we probably played more games this year than the last 2 years combined. We'll talk all about it. But first, a thank you to our Patreon friends of the show, Emil Chiljam, George Gia, Adam Harrison, Corey Bell, and the SGC. Also, a huge thank you to the rest of our patrons as well.
Thank you, thank you, thank you. And this is our second episode where it's just you and me.
I know, right?
We're not going to make a habit of this.
No. I can't stand you for that long.
No. Because you've already played, I think we played 22 games, if I counted.
It was something ridiculous.
Yeah. We're going to talk about all of them in detail. So Yay! This episode's going to be 16 hours long. Everyone already knows I'm lying because they're like, wait a minute, this just says 1 hour and 7 minutes. It's like the normal. And if I guess 1 hour and 7 minutes, I'm amazing. So, let's see. Gen Con. Let's a couple announcements first. Gen Con is coming up. That is our next convention that we will be at as of right now. Wow, it is
super close.
Yeah, it's like mid-June right now.
I know.
We are 3 to 4 weeks away from Gen Con.
Mid-July.
Oh, that's even worse.
I know.
I lost an entire month. So, mid-July to early August. I really need to actually get the dates for Gen Con. But if you're not going to Gen Con, you don't care. And if you are going to Gen Con, you already know. So Friday at Gen Con, we will have a live show at 5 o'clock. Look us up. Show up, even if you don't have tickets, we'll fit you in. I will have a ton of stuff that I need to get rid of in my collection.
Yes, please.
It'll be great. Fantastic. I might even bring some t-shirts that I'm looking at getting. Well, we have a handful of t-shirts left.
Yeah.
So I may bring some along. Let's see. What else do we have? Oh, we've hit over 100 in our survey.
Woo!
So that means that this month / the June-July giveaway, the 100th episode giveaway, is now 2 grand prize winners of $100 each. It's either a $100 gift card for Amazon or for Cool Mini or not. No, Cool Stuff Inc. There's a lot of cool things in gaming. And we will still have 4 runner-up $25 gift cards Whoa. To those same places. So 6 people are going to win. We will announce it 1 week from today, all of these people. Now, you must listen to win. So we announce it. I say, email me to claim your prize. Then you email me to claim your prize. You tell me if you want Amazon or Cool Stuff Inc. I then get your email because you just emailed me. It's a great system. And then suddenly you have money to spend in cool places. So that is happening. Also, if you want to join, you need to look at the show notes or you need to look at the webpage. So go to tabletopgametalk.com and click on the survey link and you will be able to fill out a survey. Put your email address in that survey and that is where I'm picking these from. So everyone must do it, even if you're a patron. Sorry. This is a special bonus 100th episode. So patrons are not automatically entered for this. But all our other contests, they are. So if you want to patron us, tabletopgametalk.com/Patreon. I mentioned the deadline for entering with the survey is July 14th, and we will announce it on the 16th. Okay, I don't have any more announcements because we have a ton of stuff to talk about, including some feedback. So here's where you read the segue so that I stop talking and you start talking.
All right, let's get to some feedback about past episodes. And if you have feedback about this or any of our previous episodes, email us at podcast@tabletopgametalk.com or go to our Board Game Geek forums, easily found at tabletopgametalk.com/BGG. So this one's from Michael Ohl on the Significant Others episode. What worked for me was around the time my youngest was 6, the family didn't spend as much time together as I thought we needed to, so I sat down with my wife and discussed what we should do. It wasn't even my suggestion, she just popped off with family game night and we made it a weekly habit since. I came at this from an angle of what games can I keep my 6-year-old engaged with and have added a lot of games to my collection over the years for the family rather than just me. Ultimately, this is what has turned my whole family into a gamer family. My oldest takes my games over to her friends' houses now and has a small collection of her own, and the youngest is a 13-year-old Pokemon tournament player.
I love tournament Pokemon players, especially at that, because really at a younger age, like your preteen teen years, you can be like amazing Pokemon players. At least that's where I know. However, I've talked to, last year at Gen Con, I want to say Parker was 9 or 10 at the time. And I talked to his dad, and his dad's like, yeah, most of the Pokemon players are like in their 20s and 30s. But they have like younger thing. So I think this is cool. But also, I think Michael brings up a good point here. If you want to get your significant other into gaming and you have a family to game with, family game night, that is, it's, there's no faux pas around that, right?
Yeah, I actually grew up playing games because my parents wanted to teach me lessons you don't learn other from without having siblings. And I assume they got a ton more games in than they would have otherwise if they weren't playing games with me. And didn't even have to be games that were a little my level. We actually ended up playing something as we played super complicated games. We just left them out and then played them over the course of multiple days. And they got to play a lot of games too.
Yep. So I think family game night is a great thing. It's something that's been around forever. Obviously, I think it was either Hasbro, Milton Bradley, or one of the big gaming companies that like had a campaign in the 80s and 90s of family game night. Family game night is a fantastic idea, and I expect that we will have a family game night. Well, we have family game night like two or three times a night, if I can, or at least a week, if I can convince you. But our family's small right now, so it's really easy. Hey, sit down. Let's play this game. All right, we have one from Trevor. So Trevor sent us an email, and Trevor, your email was fantastic. I read all of it. I am excerpting from Trevor's email. But we're going to do this in two parts. So first, Trevor had some feedback on asymmetric games. He says, I was completely unfamiliar with the term prior to the show. I heard you guys use it in previous episodes, but I imagine games that have a strong feeling of lopsidedness. The kids bought me Scythe for Father's Day. We have played it several times in the week since. I would have not have thought of it as an asymmetrical game if you had not told me it was. The subtle nature of each faction's rule-breaking power doesn't feel like it skews the game. I shan't presume to argue semantics with Chris, as you should not, but I'm just presenting this newcomer's perspective of what asymmetrical connoted,
yeah. Well, I will say you have great kids if they bought you Scythe for Father's Day.
I agree. And I will say that Scythe is an asymmetrical game by my loosely semantic definition of such. However, I think if a game is asymmetrical, it should still probably not feel that.
I don't know. I think that an asymmetrical game is very much I have something different than you and I know it going into the game.
Sure, but you shouldn't feel like you're playing typically in like a game like Scythe. You shouldn't feel like you're playing different games.
Sure.
So there are certain games like Vast where you are literally playing different games.
Or Root by the same people
or Vash the Expanse. But anyway, that takes it to the other extreme. So I think it is completely fine that people play games and it's like, oh, this doesn't feel asymmetric to me, or you just don't apply it.
Mm-hmm.
This actually made me think, it's like, huh, we use a lot of terms. And in this case, I defend asymmetrical because we were defining the term and talking about it in the same episode. But sometimes we use it and I just kind of assume everybody knows what I'm talking about. But I think there's a lot, like we talked about, there's a lot of gray area in asymmetrical games. Like how asymmetrical is something? And all I ever mean by it is you're starting from a slightly different setup than somebody else. And that's usually more than just I have one coin because I'm first player, you have two coins because you're second player. But Trevor, thank you for really pointing out that not everyone knows what asymmetrical means and I should stop using big terms. All right, but he continues.
Also from Trevor, regarding the significant other episode, I have to say that my wife puts up with my new hobby very well. This is partly because we have expressly negotiated two specifics, time and money. My wife joyfully tolerates my spending because she is included in the decision-making process. She doesn't even mind my Kickstarter addiction. Chris is a pusher for Kickstarter.
Yep.
But I do not think this is a bad thing. I love getting wrapped up in the hype and feeling a part of a project's success. It falls on me, though, to manage it within the context of my relationship. One thing she and I do now is play a Euro game, Carcassonne usually, one-on-one. She pours her favorite wine, I'll make a Manhattan, and we sit down to talk with a little bit of playing mixed in. It's great for both of us.
So first thing I recommend is Manhattans are very, very complicated. So Trevor, if you want to come over and make me a Manhattan, I will happily
play a one-on-one Carcassonne.
Play a one-on-one Carcassonne with you. I just do a little bit of rum and coke. I mean, yeah, that's what I do. But So I think this is actually something, when you're talking about significant others and playing games, having a game you can play one-on-one is actually really, really valuable. Like, you and I, we play Homeworlds
all the time.
Yeah. It's our go-to game. Like, pretty much it's in the car at all times. If we go to a restaurant on impromptu, I can bring it and I just slip it in my pocket. If we find that it's like, oh, you know, we have some time for a game, whatever the case, I'll pull it out and we'll just play a game.
I actually like what he's doing there outside of the game entirely. Like, it's a night. It's a date night. They're getting drinks. They're chatting. It's about more than just the game.
Yeah. And that's a great way to make it. And he actually mentions, like he said, his email is pretty long. He actually mentioned how it makes it so that it's not a kid's thing. It's like, sure, oh, you're playing games with your free time. Instead, it's, oh, we are sharing some quality time with each other. And I think that that's a great way to think about it. And yeah, Trevor, thank you. Also, as far as the money is concerned, I just don't tell you how much I
that works spend. Out better for me.
Yeah. So we're just recently married. We do have a joint account where we put some of our money so that we can pay the bills. And then we have our own accounts because, you know, it's the 21st century and it's the easiest way to hide spending from each other.
Oh, you don't know what I spend on food. It's great.
I don't. Yeah. And like, you spend more money on food than you do random investments. I'm like, why are you investing money? Jeez.
It's so much fun. You don't have to know why.
There's so many things you can actually buy with that. Oh, right. We should tell everybody you officially today.
Oh, yeah. I'm officially a CPA today. I jumped through all the hoops and I got through all the paperwork and I paid all the fees and I got my license.
Yep. And you had to wait. So you got the certificate, then you get the license, but you had to wait for it.
And then you pay the fee.
More fees. Yeah. It is an accounting thing.
I know, right?
There's got to be fees. So, yes. So, congratulations on that.
So, now I might actually have to look at your Kickstarter account.
No. But at some point, you'll support it.
There you go.
That's my plan for retirement. Okay. Let's jump on topic because we have so many things to talk about. And mm-hmm. Yeah. So, we're going to press this button.
In this episode, we're talking about games we played at Dice Tower Con 2018. All right, here we go. Bubble Pop, Reef, Starship Samurai, Critical Mass, Intel, Nevermore, Gretschnitz, Montana, taking a breath, whew, Echidna Shuffle, Civilization, Heroes of Terranoth, The Networks, and Gizmos. And we'll throw in a few prototypes and previews as well.
Yeah, now before anyone gets excited, we didn't actually play Civilization, we played Civilization.
Yeah, the pronunciation is hard when it's missing vowels.
Capital C, capital V, I with an infinity mark, Lization.
Civilization.
It was actually one of our swag games.
Yeah.
So there's some of these small cons they give you, you show up and they give you a bag of things. So Dice Tower Con,
Dice Tower Cruise,
and CMON Expo all just gave you swag. So let's talk about the two that we actually got, like the swag games. Sure. Bubble Pop was the first one.
Yeah, that one's actually kind of fun. If you've ever played, there's an app that's very similar to it. I think it called something along the lines of Bubble Pop. But you basically have where in the app, you have a row of bubbles and you're shooting at it to make them pop. In the game, it's two player, and you have a communal row of bubbles in the middle that you keep refilling. But instead of shooting them at the other person, you're taking them and hoping to pop certain colors. And then once you get three in a row, they pop and you can use their power, and their power can help you hurt the others. And it actually had something to do with planets. Like, it's called Bubble Pop, but then it decided that it was themed planets after we opened it.
Yeah, so it should have been more like Planet Pop.
Yeah, sure.
But just because of the theme. But these cute little planets. But that's exactly what it was. So you have your side. I have my side. There's two rows in the middle. At the beginning of everything, you're going to draw two bubbles from the bag. So they're random bubbles that appear. You're going to fill up all of the missing things, because sometimes you could have three or four missing spots. And then you're going to choose two bubbles that are adjacent to each other to slide in your direction. If they pop, great. If they don't, then your opponent goes and they go. This game looks silly. On the box, I'm just like, okay, it's a two-player game. Let's give it a shot. I thought there was a lot of strategic thought in this one.
Absolutely, especially with the combos you were making.
Well, and that's the cool thing, because you can have I pop these bubbles, and anytime you have three bubbles in a row, it pops all those three bubbles plus any other of the same color touching it. So it's not just three. It could be four or five. It could be any combination, really.
And then gravity takes effect, and all the bubbles above it move down, and that could turn it into another set of three.
Yeah. So if you trigger multiple powers in the same round, after all your bubbles pop, you use those powers one after another to, you know, destroy your opponent. There's also a solo aspect to this. The box is specifically 1 to 2 players. And we didn't, I didn't play the solo game. You didn't play the solo game.
But it's the app.
It's, well, maybe. Maybe, yes, you could. There is no app that actually does this.
Sure.
So I think that, well, at least I don't know that there's an app. There's a lot of apps out there. So I don't know that there's not an app that does this. But I can't say that it's specific to an actual app. It is a match 3 game. So Bejeweled and Candy Crush, those are match 3 games where you get 3 in a row and it pops and then you have your chain reactions. So that's where I think where you're probably thinking. But yes, there's a solo version of this. And it seems like the solo version would be kind of fun because you're just drawing from a bag and trying. It's a puzzle at that point.
Sure.
So that was Bubble Pop. The other one that we got in the bag was
is the CB one that Elation. I didn't pronounce.
So this one is a 3-age civilization game with hand management. So you have 8 cards in your hand and you can do different actions such as produce certain resources or steal resources or a few other things.
You can grab victory points, which in this game are called happiness points.
Right. You win if you get the most happiness at the end. Your civilization, the happiest at the end. Yay, you win. And I've always said this. That was a different saying. If the planet explodes and I'm on it, I've won life. That's what I used to say. You've never heard me say that?
No, not even a little bit.
Well, this is before I did. Like, now I don't want the planet to explode. But I'm just like, you know, if an asteroid hits a planet or something and I'm here, I'm like, woohoo, I made it to the end.
You've had the most happiness.
Well, that's the thing. It's just like, you got to the end of the game.
Sure.
So otherwise, you didn't get to the end of the game. Wow, this is morbid. But anyway, CVLization is not necessarily like that, although it does end after the 3rd age. But so you have 8 cards in your hand. You're going to play 3 rounds per age. And you're going to play 2 cards. One is face down, one is face up. And you're going to play in turn order. So I can see your face up card, but I can't see your face down card. But all these cards have different levels of efficiency. Right. So if only one person in that round played a card, you take the first line of effectiveness, which is usually okay. If 2 people played it, you take the second line of effectiveness, both players, and that actually is a pretty good one. That's like the best one. And if 3 people played it, it's usually the worst one, oftentimes with no effect whatsoever. So it's sort of this, what did she play? What didn't she play? Should I play this card because it's going to be really good? Should I wait? Oh, I see one, you know, mining. I don't think there's a mining in there, but we'll say thievery because I know there's a thievery. There's one thievery
face up.
You like
that card.
It's a great card. And if I play another one, then that's 2. But if someone has it face down, then it does nothing at all. Ooh, this is a tricky one. So
the hardest part for me was the 3-player variant because we were playing 2-player. It had a 3rd person that was a dummy person. And so we basically shuffled their hand and theirs was random. So we saw one face up and there was one face down for the dummy player as well. And that was harder for me because I couldn't like strategize what would this person pick to benefit themselves.
I will say this is probably best at 3 or 4 players. But it felt a lot like Roll for the Galaxy, where Roll for the Galaxy has that you're still making a pick for the dummy player.
Except no dice.
But the same kind of thing where it's like, okay, what action is the dummy player going to pick? I can't anticipate it, but I know there's going to be some random action that they're going to choose.
Sure.
So same kind of idea here. I actually really liked this game, though. It was a Spiel des Jahres winner at, I think, in 2016. So it won for Best Family Game. And I can see why. So actually, after you've done your 3 ages, no, after you've done a round, you then get to buy a card. And there's different cards that will actually enhance different whatever ability. So anytime you gain happiness through this effect, you gain another happiness or whatever the case, there's a bunch of different things, and they all give you happiness value at the end, too. So you're getting resources during the first part of the round. You're buying a card for the second round. Once you've done that 3 times, you go to the 2nd age. Once you've done that 3 times, you go to the 3rd age. And the 3rd age, at the end of that, which the cards get better, obviously, you count up your happiness points, and who has the most happiness wins.
Yeah, that was a good one. It was a good for a freebie.
Yep. Now, I mentioned last week or the week before or sometime. Oh, I think it was with you. We were driving the car. Reef.
Yes.
That I had not played it at Origins.
And that we had seen it played while I was waiting in line.
And then we decided to play it at Dice Tower Con.
It worked out pretty well. They were demoing it and they had everything there, and it was as appealing as it looked when I was waiting in line. But I'll let you describe it.
Well, all right. So what Reef is, it's a 4x4 board. No, 5x5.
Yeah, something bigger than that.
6x6.
It's a grid.
There's a grid. There's an X by X board, and you start out with four different colors in the center of your board. So red, blue, yellow, and green, I think. And on your turn, you're going to take a card from a communal drafting location. So there's three cards that you can take for free, or one card that's on the top of the deck. And if you take that card, it's going to cost you a clam. And clams are what you're trying to get in this game. The top of the card, and so that's one thing you can do, so you can take a card. If you play a card, the top of the card says you can take two different colored discs. So it can be two blues or red or blue, whatever the case may be. I think there might have been purple in there, but anyway.
Purple, yellow, red, and green?
Maybe. Four different colors. In any case, it will tell you exactly what two colors to take. You take those colors, and then you put them on your board. And you can stack them up, or you can put them one level, whatever you want to do. Once you've done that, you look at the bottom of the card, and it has a pattern that you're trying to match. So if I see a pattern that is two blues next to each other, once I'm done placing my tiles, I'm going to look down, and I'm going to see how many sets of two blues next to each other I have. And for each of those, I'm going to score the number of points on the cards. This seems pretty straightforward and easy. There's different patterns that can happen, though. So maybe there's two blues next to each other, but that's a number two in there. So now I need to say two blues next to each other, but they have to be at least the second level or higher.
And you can stack up to four levels.
And you can stack, you can stack probably as high as you want. Not as high as you
want? Nope, it has to be. Four is the max.
All right. Well, you can stack up to four levels, although that's crazy high. And why anyone would do that is just ridiculous. But you also have these interesting combinations you can make. So if I have two blues and I happen to have like three sets of two blues on the board, I score for each one of those. If you have just a single green on a card, every place you have a green, you're going to score points for that.
It does have to be the highest on the stack. So if you've put a green down and then to meet a different point for a different card, you put an orange on top of that, then you no longer have a green to score in a future card.
Yeah. So basically, you score the board by looking from the top down, and the only thing you care about is the color you can see and how high it is. So it could be blue, purple, green in a stack. It's a green three as far as scoring is concerned. I really like this game. I still don't know if I'm going to buy it because it's still a place tiles for points game. And this is not something that I tend to pull up very often. But as far as recommending it to more casual gamers, I would recommend this game immediately. It's super, super easy to learn, super easy to get into. And it's something you want to play again right after you're done playing.
And I know we've been describing it with grids and discs, but it actually is pretty visually appealing. If you think about reefs, these are little bits of fish that might be on the reef, and you're
coral
looking coral. There you go, yeah. And they're really pretty, and it looks really pretty.
It does. So that was Reef. So speaking of a game that looks really pretty, and I'm like kept going back to it, and then we finally played it, Starship Samurai. Now Starship Samurai is pretty much exactly what it sounds like: samurai robots in space.
In space,
yeah. But there are ships as well, and there are cards. And there are there's some hand management, there's some area control, there's some combat, there's
alliance building. The alliances that you get points for.
Oh, yeah, there's factions on the board. So you don't build alliance with other players, but there are factions on the board you're trying to control. And the higher, you know, loyalty they have to you, you're going to get points. This game is pretty. It's super, super pretty. The miniatures are awesome. The gameplay itself is pretty cool, too. So essentially what happens is on your turn, you have these four tiles, 1, 2, 3, 4. And you can place them on four different actions, which are move things, draw cards, get money, or something else that we'll recall in a moment.
Draw cards, move things, get money. There's one other. Oh, the alliance thing.
Oh, right. You can move the factions. So you can move people's alliances to whether they're... basically, you can gain loyalty by a certain number of steps. Now, so if I place a one on move, I can move one of my ships or one of my samurais. If I place a one on money, I get one money. If I place a four on money, I get four monies. So how much you... what number you put on each action is how much you can use it.
And you will only do one of them a turn, and then you do what the action is. But that doesn't mean that you can't pick the same action next turn with a different one of your numbers.
Right. So I can put four down, I get four money, then you go and you put two down and draw two cards, and I put a three down on the money again, and now I have seven money. Now, money is important because it can power up your fighters, which is a type of ship, and you can actually, so we say we have tiles 1, 2, 3, 4. If I decide to put it down, say I'm going to put a 2 on move because I played my 4 and 3 on money. So I put a 2 on move. I can put another 4 money on there and now it's a 6 on move. I lose the money, obviously, but I get to move 6 ships.
And some of the cards cost money. Some of the cards actually cost different things within the game for the more powerful ones for you to be able to play them.
Right. So, and now once we've gone through and we've played all four of our actions, we're going to look at the board. So the board has a number of planets equal to the number of players. So we were playing a four-player game. So now we're going to look at the board and we're going to tally up our strength in each of the different areas.
The move action let us put our ships and our samurai onto the planets that we liked the best. And the planets that had the... on our turn, if any of the planets were most controlled by us, then we got the loyalty to the factions that were associated with those planets. So that's how your points go up for that.
Right. Now, there's also this thing where you will put basically... at the start of your turn, you're going to check your control to see if you have the most control at each planet. And if you do, you get a bonus, usually with a faction sliding up and down. You might get to draw a card. You might get money. Whatever. It depends on the random planet card that shows up. So now you've done all this, and now we're going to fight. And the way we fight is essentially everyone involved in the battle is going to take a card face down, and then we're going to reveal it around the board and resolve it. Now, oftentimes this is just a card that stays in your hand, which is gain a money or gain a card, because you know you're not going to win the battle, but that's okay. You're still going to get something out of it. Or you're going to flip up a power card of some sort, or you're going to flip up some kind of an effect or something like that. And ultimately, whoever wins that planet takes the card, gets 5 points, and then you go on to the next planet.
And you win by having the most strength. There's one ship that's worth 2 points. The rest of the ships are worth 1, unless you've added money. And then your samurai are worth a varying number of strength, but they also have different powers that have helped you during different phases.
Right. So once you've gone through all the planets, everybody who won, all of their plastic units, which is all their units that have power, go back to their base, essentially, leaving the second player in control of that planet for the next round. So there's a little bit of... it's like, well, I may lose this battle, but I'm still in a good spot for the next round. You deal out new planets that have new abilities, and there you go. This game is cool. It's fun. I highly recommend it. One of the hugest flaws, though, all of the coolest samurais, which they look awesome, you cannot tell them apart from each other.
So because in the beginning of the game, you each get a color. You start with, let's say I'm yellow and Chris is blue. The samurai are drafted. So the first player gets the first pick, and then it snakes back to the last player. And then the last player picks again, and everybody ends up with 2 samurai. But because they're drafted, there's no actual base color to the samurai. They can be anybody's. Yeah. So in one game, they can be my yellow. In a different game, they can be Chris's blue. But they have no color.
Yeah, and they look really, really cool when you look at them. But when you're looking on the board and you're looking at one planet and there's 6 different samurai there, it's like, okay, that one's mine. I know that. But whose is that and whose is that and whose is that?
And how many points are they worth, and what are their powers?
Their powers all different. So if you're going to get this, you also want to get some miniature dice. The powers go from, I think, 3 to 6. So you can set a little color die that matches your player color and you can turn it to the value of the mech. And that would fix the problem with the game. They say it is purely a component problem. The game itself is actually quite fun.
Totally.
All right. Critical Mass. Actually, that was Starship Samurai we just talked about. Critical Mass is one that you did not like.
No, I was not the biggest fan of this one.
And I just think you're wrong. So I'll explain. Critical Mass is a new game by Arcane Wonders. It is part of the Dice Tower Essentials line. It is, you are playing a mech. But there's no miniature battles or anything like that. There's no miniatures in this one. You just have a board that tells you what your mech's powers are, essentially. And then you have a deck of cards that you've created to go along with your mech. And there's different attacks, there's different blocks, there's various things, and you're trying to make that go along. You know, think of it as a board, but as essentially a dueling card game. Now, here's where it gets interesting. Every card you play, so we're going to play a turn, and I'm going to put a card face down, and you're going to put a card face down.
Think
and
war.
Like, war, but we get to choose five cards.
Sure.
So then we're going to flip those cards up. And if I have an attack and you have an attack, whoever has the highest initiative's attack goes off. If you have a dodge, your dodge is almost always higher initiative. We didn't see one that wasn't instant. So then you dodge my attack. Sometimes. You could dodge an attack that... Well, you could dodge most attacks, but some attacks were unavoidable, so you couldn't dodge it.
And then some cards that you could draft into your hand are cards that would avoid the unavoidable attacks.
Right. But they might have a block, but if I have piercing, I pierce through blocks. So it's really this kind of mind game of what are you going to play? What am I going to play? It's also, as you play the cards stay out on the table until you play a reset that allows you to take all the cards back into your hand.
And along with the reset, there were other some special cards that aren't an attack or a dodge. And so you definitely have to plan those out well, because if the other person attacks, then you're being attacked with nothing to do about it.
Right, because we have an advanced card. An advanced card allows you to take from a pre-created deck that you can add to your hand. So it's kind of a little bit like Mage Wars, where you have a booklet of cards that you can pick from. When you play the advanced card, you can pick any card from this deck that you have on the side. And depending on whether or not you were able to advance twice or not, you can get tech twos or tech threes. And so there's this kind of back and forth. When is it safe to play the advance? I can play it on your reset, or if you're going to think I'm going to attack and you're going to dodge, I could play it then. But if I play the advance and you attack, then my advanced isn't nearly as effective. So there's this kind of back and forth mind game, which I thought was really cool.
And the damage that we're doing to each other are in... There are four different pieces of the machinery that we're attacking. Ones that are worth 1 point, 2 points, 3 points, and 4 points. So if I do five damage to you, I can do any combination of four and one, two and three, two twos and a one, as long as I'm doing the total amount of damage that my card has done to you.
Right.
And then when I get those pieces of machinery down to zero health, you get a little bit of a disadvantage.
Yeah, there's a negative bump in there. And then when you kill all of the pieces of my mech, then I'm dead and you won.
That's what happened.
Yeah. So you won and you still don't like it. Whatever. But I think this is cool. It comes in packs of two. So there's two boxes out. Well, they're not quite out yet. They will be out, I believe, in August. And there was a bunch of them at the show that I didn't get to buy because you said, I don't like it. And I said, fine, I won't get it. But...
Well, by the time you decided to do it anyway, it was sold out.
Yeah. So I'll just have to get it at Gen Con, which I probably won't, because if you're not going to play it with me, I'm not sure who I will play it with. Maybe someone else who bought it, and then I can just play with their deck. We have enough two-player games that we can play. So that was Critical Mass. The next one we played was...
Speaking of a two-player game that I really did enjoy, called Intel. It was basically, there were multiple, basically... very complicated tic-tac-toe boards in front of us. And it was like, if you've ever heard of Kamisato, the concept where I place my, in this case, it's good hacker or bad hacker, so white or black pieces. Where I place my piece is the board in which you had to place your piece. So if I place my piece on a yellow section of my board, then you have to place your piece on the yellow board. And we're trying to win our respective tic-tac-toes three times over the course of all these boards. Yeah. So we have to think about where we're sending the other player and where they're going to send us if we send them there. And it was really, really thinky.
I'm going to call it hex-tac-toe.
Ooh.
Because saying tic-tac-toe makes it cheapens what it is.
Sure.
We like this game so much, we bought two copies and we're going to give away one at Gen Con. So it's pretty much exactly the thing. It's what did you call it?
Hackers?
No, the chess variant.
Oh, Kamisato.
Kamisato. I've not played it, but from apparently what this is when I make a move, I'm going to end on a color, and you have to move a piece that is also on that same color. So that's very similar to this. The hex board itself is a hex in the middle, and then there's six spaces around it. You win hex-tac-toe if you have three in a line, or if you have three...
A triangle
on the outside spaces. So it's actually a really, really... When you first start playing it, you're kind of playing defensively, and then all of a sudden you're like, oh, I can play offensively because I really want her to go on the yellow board, because that's going to force her to pick orange, and if she picks orange, then I can get my hex-tac-toe here. So I'm going to place over here on my board, I'm going to place on the yellow, and then you have to. So it's like forcing moves out of people. And It's deep. Now, you can get ties in this game, and the rules say play again, which is actually fine, because there's enough variance here where I think it would be actually quite fun to play multiple times. So that's Intel, I-N-T-E-L-L-E, and we both really like this one.
And the next one is one of my favorites of the whole convention, called Nevermore. And this is basically if Edgar Allan Poe's world of horror stories, this is themed multiples of those. And it's a trick-taking game. And the tricks, the suits of the cards that you're taking include ravens. And then there are other suits that let you attack or draw cards or heal. And those are the suits in the game. And you draft the cards by passing them. You first get a hand, you take three, or you pass three, and then you...
You get a hand of five cards.
You get a hand of five.
Keep two, pass three.
Keep two, pass three, and then keep two of the ones you keep one of the ones you get, and you pass two more.
Nope.
And then,
so the drafting in this is keep two, pass three, then keep three, pass two, but it's any three that you have in your hand.
Gotcha.
So you're not stuck with the first two you draft, and then it's keep four, pass one. So you are stuck with the last one that gets passed to you.
So how the actual cards work is then once everything is passed around, you have a hand of whatever you've collected. And then we play the cards in order. First, if someone has collected all five ravens like you did once.
It happens.
Then you've shot the moon. In this case, it's a hearts term. And you play all five ravens. And we can talk about that in a sec. Yeah. But then if you haven't... if no one's gotten all five ravens, then you go in order of
It's a random order, and you're going to do healing, damage, and victory points.
And drawing cards.
And drawing cards.
And so what'll happen is, if it's time to show the healing cards, I will hold out my hand of however many of those that I have. So let's say I have two. Everyone sees that I have two cards in front of me. And Chris might be holding two cards in front of him. And so then one, two, three, we show what we have. Now, if you have ravens that aren't all five, you have to use them, unfortunately, to cancel out cards of your own choice. So he was holding out two cards, but he was using one of his ravens to cancel out his only heal because he wanted to get rid of the raven on something that wasn't important to him. And then how the value of the cards for all of the cards in each of the rounds that they're used, it's the highest strength minus the next highest strength, and that is the value of the healing or the attack that you get.
Yep, and or victory points or whatever the case is. So really, you do this is pretty quick because you're doing your draft of five cards. You're trying to, like I say, you don't want to have crows. If you have crows, it cancels out. But if you have four or five crows, it's not too bad, because if you have some extra crows at the end, like you've played all your cards and you still have a crow, you get a special dark power. And if you have the magic cards in your hand, then that one gives you a special light power that you can use on your turn. You keep playing until one person... I think we played up to six victory points, but that might have been a demo game. I think it normally plays to 10 or 11.
Yeah.
And then you could also die. And if you die, you turn into a raven. But you keep playing, and there are ways to get turned back from a raven and become real again. And when you're a raven, some of the cards have special powers that only the ravens can use.
So you can either win if you have 6 points, or if no one has 6 points, but you're the only human left and everyone else has turned into ravens.
Yep. Again, 6 points, I think, is the demo. I think you get more. And you definitely get more life as well. This game, we bought, as soon as we got done with the demo, we bought it. We haven't played it full game, which is why we're like, in the demo, it's this. But this is a super, super easy game to teach. I think it plays 3 to 6 players, and you just sit down, you draft, and you reveal cards, then you draft and you reveal cards. It's great. And we also got the expansion, which introduces a little bit of asymmetry and gives you a specific character that you're playing that has a special power both in human form and in raven form that adds to the just kind of the flavor of it.
I'm actually excited to play this with Kitty and Spencer.
Oh, yeah. We should bring that over.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. So that was Nevermore. The next one we played was Gretchnitz.
And we have to have a shout out to Jim, who is a listener of the show.
So Jim like looks at me and he's like, Tabletop Game Talk? I'm like, yeah. He's like, I recognize your voice. And then we started talking, and then he was demoing a game at the show. And I'm like, well, what are you demoing? So he turned out he was demoing a 40K game. And I want to say Warhammer 40K. So this game has nothing to do with Warhammer. Nothing to do with Warhammer 40K. I don't understand why the license exists on this game at all, but it was fun.
Yeah, the game itself was great. Yeah.
So it has these little four different cardboard cars that you put together. And you're trying to race towards the end of this kind of desert land. And there's some obstacles in the way, different things. But it's a blind hand game. So I have five cards in my hand. And I may want to attack you, but if I want to attack you, I have to discard two red cards.
And by blind, it's basically like Hanabi, where the cards are actually facing away from you. So you can use one or two mechanics in the game to try and figure out about how many attack cards you have, but you're still guessing as to which ones they are in your hand.
Right. Now, most of the cards are attack cards. There's a couple malfunction cards and a couple explosion cards. And the explosion ones actually hurt you. The malfunction cards hurt you too. But anyway, the attack cards are great if you're trying to attack. But the way this works is a real-time dice rolling game. And you're rolling three dice, and each die has a different power, ability. You can move forward and to the left or forward and to the right. Apparently, these trucks do not go forward in general. you can say it's a question where you can say how many cards do I have, ask somebody, they have to tell you what it is. There is an attack die, so if you want to attack, and you're trying to get the dice size that you want, and as soon as you have the three that you want, you roar, or arg, and then everyone has to lock in the dice as they are, and then you play, and your cars move forward and stuff. It's a quick, little, simple, fun game. It is absolutely 100% a filler game. I don't know how it's a Warhammer 40K license, but get rid of that. There's like these mechanical, like these goblins that are in this Mad Max-y kind of world, which is still kind of fun. I would, if I was rating games, and I don't typically rate games, I would give it a 6. But
I don't know. If I were a 12-year-old boy, I'd probably give it like a 9.
Maybe. Because you're doing a lot of rolling. And there's a lot of possibilities for cheating and fudging the dice as well, because everyone's rolling their own thing. It's like, I'll just turn this die to this if I was a 9-year-old boy. But I did not cheat. I won. Actually, I lost fair and square. So that was Gretchnitz. And Jim, thank you for teaching us. And hopefully he's going to be at PAX Unplugged. So I'm actually looking into it. All right. Montana was the next game we played.
And this one you really liked.
I did. Well, I wasn't sure if I was going to like it because it looked like a typical
farming
Euro game. Like, it's going to take me 2.5 hours. It's just going to be a really long game. And it turned out it wasn't.
We played a full game.
Yeah. Because we were like, well, how long is the demo going to take? Because we could probably like do 30, 45 minutes. He's like, a full game doesn't take more than 45 minutes. I'm like, okay. So Montana is a game where you are trying to, you have a stack of settlements and you're trying to get all of your settlements on the board before anyone else. So at its heart, even though it looks like a very much a resource management Euro game, and there's a little bit of that, it is very much a race game. And the way you do this is you have this hex board that you build up, and each of these little hexes has a number of resources on them. You pay that number of resources and you get to put a settlement down. The trick is, there's a center settlement, and once you start building off that settlement, every other settlement
has to be adjacent
to some other settlement. It doesn't have to be yours. It just has to be adjacent to another settlement. These settlements might give you cows, which you can turn in for a free resource or a couple bucks or whatever the case is. There are canteens, so the first person to build next to an oasis will get a canteen, which gives you an extra turn. There's an auction at the market, so pumpkins is apparently a commodity in this game, because if you go to auctions, you buy things with pumpkins, which are usually upgrading stone or some other
coal.
And that makes them big stone or big coal using pumpkins.
And some settlements, you need the big stone and the big coal, not the small ones. Yeah.
And I understand regionally, someplace they call it pumpkins. I call it punkins. Whatever the case may be, whatever you call it, the orange things with a green stem.
Usually carved for Halloween.
But I actually really did like this game. I thought I was going to win. I was in the hit lead. I had one settlement remaining, and I'm like, my next turn I'm going to do this. And the people
there were four of us there. And so there were you and me, and you and me were the only ones with settlements on the table. They were just collecting resources.
Yeah, so we're like, okay, we got this. And like, I actually kind of felt bad. I'm like, wow, maybe they just don't get this game. And then it's my turn. I have one settlement left. And I just placed everything except for one settlement. And she goes, And then she's like, okay, so I'll go here, 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 here. Here's my four settlement bonus. Boom. And I built this on a double here and boom, here, here.
Then, and then she gets a canteen and then she does it again.
And then, yeah, so then she takes an extra turn and I place all my settlements. I win. And then we're like, whoa, 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 whoa. We have to do a full round, which just happened to be her husband, who also placed all his settlements. So they both beat us. And yeah, but it was a fun game. And it's like a game like this where it plays in like 45 minutes. It's really... And the components are really, really nice.
Yeah, for a worker placement Euro, this was a great, refreshing, quick game.
Yeah. So that is Montana. And I think that was the Heritage Edition that we were looking at as far as the components are concerned. All right. Enchilada Shuffle.
Yeah, we've been calling it the Enchilada Shuffle because Echidna was not on our radar, unless you think of echidnas as cute, which you should after playing this game.
So if you've never heard of an echidna... apparently, they're a kind of anteater. They look like a porcupine anteater.
Anteater.
But just Google Echidna Shuffle. That's E-C-H-I-D-N-A. This game looks like a kid's game. It looks like a 3 or 4 year old's kid's game. It's these big plastic echidnas that are on this board with colorful stumps and like big insects that ride the echidnas, and they're trying to get to their colored stumps. It in all ways looks fun and like should be casual and light. This was the thinkiest game we played, and we had just played Intel the day before.
Yeah, we were actually looking for a last game of the night that we would end up, you know, ending on. And this wasn't what we were thinking we were getting into when we saw this cute little echidnas or anteater things with some bugs and a big board.
It wasn't a bad game. So the way this works is there are paths for the echidnas to follow. And on your turn, you're going to roll this. It's a 6-sided die, but the numbers are from 2 to 7. And you're going to be able to move that many echidnas. So if you roll a 4, you're going to move 4 echidnas. Do, 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 do. And they have to follow the path. They're blocking each other. So you have to like basically move them out of the way if you're going to move things on there. When you step on something when you step on a place where your bugs are at, the bugs will jump on the echidnas. When you get to your stump, the bugs will jump off the echidnas. And then once you place all your bugs on the different stumps, you win the game.
So what you're trying to do is get your echidna to your stumps. But in doing so, you have to move other echidnas. And a lot of times that'll be empty ones, but sometimes that'll be other people's echidnas. So you want to make sure you're not moving them towards their stumps.
Right, because they will always jump on the echidnas, but they won't jump off unless you move them to there.
Right. So if it happens to be on their stump, not on their turn, it's in somebody's interest to move it off that stump.
That's how we could have stopped him from winning. We could have moved his echidna past the stump.
Oh my gosh.
So near the end of the game, there was one person who was like one step away from winning, and we kept trying to block his path, but we just realized in explaining the rules, we could have just cleared the path and moved him past it. Man, so this game...
That's how thinky it was.
So much. Like, I have to rotate here, I have to move this. It's almost like one of those slide puzzles, but in like a big circle with four smaller circles in the
middle.
Going
in opposite directions.
Yeah. It was interesting. Like I say, the theme and the gameplay don't match each other. I think that's the biggest downfall with the game. It's the cutest game ever, except for it is... just really, really abstract thinky to get past it. So that is what we're calling Enchilada Shuffle, which is really a echidna shuffle. And it was a pretty good game. The next one we played was Heroes of Terranoth. Now, this one is one I've been wanting to play since it was announced a few weeks ago, or I think it was a few weeks ago, within the last few weeks. This is Fantasy Flight's retheming of the Warhammer Fantasy Quest card game. They released this, then they lost the license, and so basically the game went nowhere. But Terranoth is their world that is in their RuneQuest world. So now they fully own the IP. And it's essentially the same game, but now they can just do whatever they want with it. Now, this is a co-op game.
And I loved it, so that tells you something.
Yeah. So this is when you start the game, you're going to get a character card, and you're going to get, is it 4 abilities?
Yes.
So you have 4 ability cards that go with that character.
It is heal yourself, aid, attack, or explore.
No, explore and rest. So there must have been 5
the
cards.
The heal was the rest, basically. The heal was rest, and then you can aid someone else, explore, or attack.
Right. So on your turn, you're going to do one of these things. And you're attempting to beat the quest that's in front of you. So you're going to go through essentially an X number of locations. In our game, it was three locations. And you're trying to explore the location. Once the location is explored, it gets removed. And you go to the next location. If you explore all of the locations before you all die, you win. If you die before you explore the locations, you lose.
And you might die because you're fighting monsters at each of the locations. And sometimes the quest will have a certain monster you need to beat. Sometimes the quest will have a certain location you need to go to. And in our case, there were both.
Yep. Now, the gameplay itself is pretty simple. There's three white dice and three black dice. Three or four.
Something like that.
There's white dice and black dice. White dice are good. Black dice are bad. When I attack, I'm going to roll dice. And I'm going to try to get a certain number of successes and to kill the monster. Any successes I get is going to do damage. However, if I'm engaged with a monster, so he's attacking me, I'm also going to roll a black die. And black dice can cause damage to myself. Same thing happens. That mechanic works for everything. So if I'm going to aid, I might aid you. But the number of successes I get is the number of essentially auto successes you get on your next roll. But I can still, if I'm engaged with something else, I can still take damage while trying to aid you. Healing, I'm healing myself. And then resting is usually kind of a reset plus a couple other things you get when you rest. At a certain point, the scenario will tell you, you get to advance. So you get to level up one of your abilities. And you're going to go through, you have it's actually kind of like Critical Mass, where you're going through a stack of cards. And you get
that
to pick
are your
the
own.
One, yeah, that are your own. And you get to pick one. So I get to power up attack. And now my attack can attack two or three things at a time instead of just one thing.
And what's really cool about that is they have different
subclasses.
And so once you pick a subclass for one of your upgrades, so I make my attack better because it's a certain subclass, then when I upgrade my explore, it has to be of the same subclass.
Right, which is both a pro and a con. So if I'm playing the warrior and my subclass is berserker, from that point on, I'm really choosing the type I'm upgrading because I'm always going to have to choose berserker. But that's fine. We are actually playing in the demo where you could just pick anything you want, which I think is kind of more fun. Now, I did really enjoy this game. I thought it was fun. It was easy to learn. It didn't overstay its welcome in any sense. My only complaint with it is currently only standalone scenarios. So there are a number of different hero cards. There's a number of different combinations of characters you can play. But when you finish the scenario, everything resets.
Yeah, when it was over, I asked, so in the future scenarios, do we get to upgrade more? Because I thought it would be even cooler. And he was like, no, this was an easy scenario. You actually upgrade less in the future.
Yeah. So I'm kind of hoping to see this game really kind of branch out into character development and campaign modes and stuff. And it's Fantasy Flight, so their model is release a base game and keep releasing expansions. So I'm pretty confident that everything I want to see out of this game will come out of this game. But in the base box itself, it teaches you the core mechanics. It gives you, I think he said, five scenarios. And there's a lot of gameplay here. It's just I'm now addicted to storytelling and campaign games, so I can't get past this.
It also did have one of my favorite dice mechanics of the exploding die. So if you rolled a success, that was one of the exploding successes. You would roll again and see if you got another success. Yeah,
the exploding dice is really a concept that should exist everywhere. And anytime I play a game that has it and then I go to a game that doesn't have it, I'm like, oh, wait a minute. You mean I can't actually roll higher than the number of dice I have? That's ridiculous. So that was Heroes of Terranoth. The last one we're going to talk about that we played was Gizmos.
Yeah.
Which I saw at CMON, and I watched it play, but I didn't actually get to sit down and play it. And I walked by this table, because there's only one at the entire convention. I walked by this table probably 15 times.
A day.
It was maybe. And the first time I walked by it and it was empty, you weren't with me. So I'm like, ugh. So we stocked a table that was there. And we're just like, we're just going to sit here until you're done. And then we're going to play.
I will say, visually, I was not as excited about it as you were until I sat down to play.
I think it's visually looks really cool. But you're right. It's basically a bunch of square cards and a marble in a bucket. Marbles in a bucket. With one little chute that comes out. So there's six marbles that you can see and everything else is in a bucket. So the way this works is you're attempting to build a science project and it's
Rube Goldberg.
Rube Goldberg. So that's you can kind of think of it that way. And the only reason I would say that is because you can build up these combos where when I do one thing, that will trigger me to being able to do another thing, which will trigger me being able to do another thing. So the better your combos you have, the more efficient certain actions become. And the marbles represent different energy. The energy is what you use to buy the different boring square cards, which represent enhancements on different actions you can take. This game is awesome. It's almost beyond explaining. Besides, it's a combo building, quick, fun, tactile game that once you're done playing it, you're going to want to like play it again. And it's also super simple to start playing it again. You just put all the cards in a stack, shuffle it, and you're good to go again.
Totally. One of the dudes that was sitting there before us was explaining it to us while we were waiting. And he said the best comment that I've heard about it. Once it starts getting super intense, once it starts getting kind of crazy is when the game is over. So it never gets too combo-y or too thinky. It's just fun enough to where you reach the point where you're proud of your Rube Goldberg machine and then you've either won or lost.
Yep. It was good stuff. So that's Gizmos. It's not going to be available at Gen Con from what I've heard, but it should be available shortly afterwards. If you liked Potion Explosion, you will like this. What did it, someone said it was a cross between Potion Explosion and Splendor.
Oh, yeah.
So if you like Potion Explosion, you like Splendor.
Actually, that's a really good combo.
Yeah. Gizmos is that game.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So I'm going to go pretty quick over the rest of these because there's a few games that we looked at that I think are worth talking about. I want to talk about a couple prototypes we played that will be coming out on Kickstarter. So we'll get further into those when that happens. The first one was Crab Dash.
Oh my gosh, I love that one.
So I'm going to do this really quick and easy. It doesn't exist, so I don't want to go too much detail. It should exist eventually. But if you ever have seen Turtle Racing, this is Turtle Racing with crabs.
But really cool crabs.
But really cool crabs. You roll some dice. There's two turtles you're going to move. It tells you how you're going to move them. You get to bet at the end of each time you roll the dice.
And you're betting on which ones will leave or where in the circle they'll leave or lots of things.
Yeah. I've been to one turtle racing bar and it was exactly this. So he really captured that turtle racing aspect. So that's Crab Dash. Keep an eye out for it and I will mention it when it's out on Kickstarter. The other one was Knights of Glory. This one will also be on Kickstarter, which I'll talk about more in a couple weeks because it actually is coming out on Kickstarter, I think next week or the week after. This one is a press your luck. Well, they say it's a press your luck dungeon crawl. I'm going to call it a press your luck race because it felt more like a race to me than a dungeon crawl. But it was actually really, really fun.
Basically, you had a hand of cards and you're rolling a die and then you need to bluff people into thinking you have the matching cards in your hand. But then once you use them, you can move again, but you have less cards in your hand because you use them.
Yeah. So we played a game last year and we talked about it called Celestial.
Oh, yeah.
It's very similar to that where you're rolling dice and it's like, yes, I have these cards and I can move on. But it's a little bit more, it's fantasy themed and it doesn't look as kidsy as like riding a dirigible through Callout Cities, but it's very, very similar. And in this case, in Celestial, you were all going together until you jumped off.
So
this one, you're independent.
So you were bluffing people for their benefit in Celestial, but in this one, you're bluffing people for your own benefit.
Yep. And you can win chips, which are auto successes and things like that. So they're very different games, but if you're familiar with Celestial or the way that plays, it's a similar mechanic. So that was Knights of Glory again. I will talk more about it when it comes out. We also played Mutants, Genetic Gladiators. This one was another hand management game with some interesting... You play the card into the center, and then at the beginning of your turn, you'd have to move that card left or right, which could push off other cards because there was only two spaces on the left or right. You could buy cards from your deck. So you split your deck into three different things, and there's face up on each one. And it was also pretty fun. We played, it was an early prototype. When it comes out, like I said, I don't want to get too much into it simply because you're not going to be able to track this game down. When it comes out on Kickstarter, we'll talk more about it. Okay, games we looked at. We're running low on time, but I do want to talk about Cthulhu, Death May Die.
And we did talk about this one a little bit and the next one a little bit on the Kickstarter episode.
All right, so Cthulhu, Death May Die, if you want to hear all about this, because we actually talked about it a lot of it, go back to our Friday episode of Kickstarter. It will be live. If you're listening to this, it's live. If you're listening to this within 3 to 4 weeks after it dropped, it's live. After that, check for late backing. After that, check eBay. It's going to be about $600. I wish I were kidding, but someone's going to be like, oh, you're right. This game is an Eric Lang, Rob Davio game. It's basically just gold as far as... And the gameplay looks amazing as well.
Yeah, on top of everything Chris has said, it looks super fun.
Yes. So we sat in a session. That was Cthulhu, Death May Die. But Betrayal Legacy, Betrayal and House of the Hill Legacy, we sat in a session with Rob Davio and where he was talking about Betrayal Legacy. This game looks phenomenal.
So it's basically Betrayal, House on the Hill, with a few differences that make it legacy.
Yeah. So, and one of the things they did is they developed Betrayal a little bit more. So they codified some things that they didn't, that were kind of a little loosey-goosey before. And I use that word codify a lot. Essentially what that is it takes a concept and makes it into more of a specific rule, a something that you could apply logic to as a rule.
Something they had to explain on a lot of cards. They just use a word or two now to mean that.
Right. So they did a lot of cleanup there. They introduced some new concepts and some new pieces. And essentially what happens and how this plays out is you start the game in 1666. And you play, I want to say there's 13 chapters and one prologue chapter, because 14 is not scary, but 13 plus a prologue is. So there's 13 chapters, and every chapter is 25 years after the last one. Now, some of the characters you played in the first chapter may carry over if they survive.
Sure. If you play a little kid in the first chapter, you might be the adult.
Yeah. Or you could play an adult age up too, but your characters are going to die quite frequently because you don't often live
in a scary haunted house.
In a scary haunted house for 75 to 100 years. But the story itself progresses on. And so there's a lot of throwback and back and forth and permanency. And once you're done playing the game and you're at the 13th chapter, you have a betrayal game that you can play over and over and over.
There are actually cards in the game that only come out after the legacy game has been played.
Right. So it's not like you can, all right, we're done with the legacy game and nothing else. And it's like, no, you're done with the legacy game. And now you have a customized version of Betrayal on House of the Hill that you've created. So this looks amazing. In the still the grand or the area theme. Of theme of legacy, another game, legacy game I'm looking really forward to is Werewolf Legacy.
Yeah, the Ultimate Werewolf Legacy looks so cool.
Now, this one is, you're playing this in sets of three, and then there's four chapters. So four chapters, and that's then each 12. One has three scenarios, so total of 12. And the way it's set up is you can play the three with one group, and then you can play a completely different group in the next three, and the next three, and the next three. And there is this faux leather-bound book that comes with it, with all the stickers and stuff, and all the reporting, and you're basically tracking this village's progress as it goes through and deals with werewolves and such. It all they had there was essentially the book and some prototype components, but I am absolutely picking this up, and this is going to be a game that I'm going to run at every show. We're going to run three back-to-back werewolves, and it's going to be a tabletop game talk like thing that we run every time we're at a new show.
And it'll have a whole story behind it once it's over.
And it's going to be amazing. So that's Werewolf Legacy by Bezier Games, based on the Ultimate Werewolf stuff. Now, it does start out simple, just basic werewolf stuff, and they introduce roles over time. So it's not like you have all these crazy roles out of the gate. Another one we looked at, and this was by the same makers of Nevermore, was Tower of Madness. And this is a Cthulhu-ish game. It is similar to the feel of like a Dread role-playing game, where you're rolling dice, you're trying to get certain combos so that you don't have to pull tentacles from a tower. If you do, you pull the tentacle and maybe some marbles drop. And if the marbles drop, depending on the colors, that could be good or bad. If three green marbles drop on your turn, you turn evil, and you're really, the group is trying to stop the ritual before Cthulhu is summoned, and they deal with that whole mechanic with dice and marbles and stuff.
And if you turn evil, then you are no longer trying to stop the ritual.
Then you're trying to make it happen. So it's really kind of an interesting, it's not dexterity by any means, because you can't actually even see the marbles. You just
they're in the tower.
Yeah, and the tower is covered. So you're just pulling a random tentacle. You're just trying to avoid pulling tentacles more than anything else. So that is Tower of Madness. It is going to be a very light, easy family game to play that's a little bit Cthulhu-esque. So that should be pretty fun. And then the last one we looked at was Heroes of Dominaria. Now, Dominaria is the realm that Magic the Gathering takes place in, and I may not be pronouncing that totally correct. There's been a lot of Magic the Gathering board games that have come out that have used Magic-esque cards to try to, you know, simulate a board game. This one, I think, is the best so far in capturing the idea of Magic the Gathering without feeling like they need to do like repurpose the cards.
Yeah, they aren't together. Weighted down by the detail of each individual card, but the overall theme uses mana as a general resource.
Yeah, so you're moving from world to world. You are collecting mana of the five different types. You have powers that you can take once you have enough mana. You'll be able to get artifact cards, which are going to match in different cards that you know if you've played Magic the Gathering. And ultimately, though, it's a victory point game. So you're trying to get the most victory points within a certain number of turns. The more players, the least amount of turns you get. So it kind of balances the length of the game. We didn't get a chance to play this. I was actually kind of disappointed with the WizKids booth at Dice Tower Con, because it was just a couple of guys that were kind of sitting there, and it just didn't look all that appealing, like they really wanted to teach you anything or wanted to play the game with you.
And it didn't help that the table they had, this game itself is quite large, and so if they were demoing any other game, they were doing it slightly on top of this one, so you couldn't demo both at the same time.
Yeah, so it was, the booth was really small at the WizKids booth, so, I mean, no offense to the guys, like they basically had to work the booth like 8 hours a day, 5 days or 4 days in a row. But I would have loved to have played it. It wasn't getting played. It just, there wasn't really any room to play it either. So, but this one is one I definitely want to check out, because I do like the lore of Magic. I just don't know that I like the
game yet.
The game yet, because I haven't played it. Okay, I think that is about as long a show as we want to do. Are you ready to end this thing?
Yeah.
All right. So you can follow us on Facebook @ Tabletop Game Talk Podcast. You can follow us on Twitter @ Tabletop Game TLK. Kitty is @ Lawful Good Mom. I'm @ Game Master Chris. And if you want to support us and be automatically entered into almost all of our contests, except for the bonus 100th episode one, you can go to tabletopgametalk.com/Patreon. And for the rest of this, you get to read it.
All right, Table Talk Game Talk is a proud member of the Dice Tower Network. Thanks for listening, and remember, we love your feedback, so email us with comments or questions at podcast@tabletopgametalk.com. Finally, a huge thank you to our patrons, Emil Jiljam, George, Adam Harrison, Corey Bell, the SGC, Sam from New York, Jason Strong, Terrence Miltner, Steven Seitz, Michael Ohl, Trevor Olson, Brian Arnold, Sean P. Kelly, Daniel Shepard, C. Marie, Rudy Liu, Benjamin Heimowitz, Jerry Huang, Stephen Phillips, Caleb O'Brien, Jennifer Engelbrecht, Justin Willard, Christopher Dong, Jason Marks, Jeremy Fisher, Kyle Hammond, David Radke, Lance Morgan, Nick Quickstra, David Sellers, Jason Rodney, Michael Yanikowski, Miles Clark, Cindy Lum, Phil Swartzel, Jordan Livingston, Greg Kamai, Zoe Ng, Chad Covey, Ann Reynolds, Eric Huffman, Adrian Dong, Christopher Vincent, Nate, Flaz Flintham, Sean Peck, Toby Kraft, Eric Silander, Adam Kriblez, Mike Smith, Christine Meyer, Trevor Davis, Wesley Treyer, Tim Vernig, and Chris Lowe. Until next week, when Chris, Kitty, and Josh all get back together for the 100th episode, keep playing games and having fun.
Good night. So I said 1:07?
Uh-huh.
Or 1:07.
1:07.
So we can talk for about 20 more seconds and then still be within the 1:07.
You did that on purpose, didn't you?
We're not going to risk it.